I'd like to call the House Rules Committee meeting to order. It is 4 o'clock because we always start on time. Today is Wednesday, January 17th. Probably did that. Members present are Speaker Tilton, Representative Shaw, Representative Allard, Representative Subner, Representative Schrage, and Representative Fields, and myself, Representative Johnson. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business, which is the good news. I'd ask that everyone turn their phones off, because of the Rules Committee, you buy donuts for the whole building, not just the people on the committee. So, present in the room today, we have Senator Kawasaki, Rep. Ortiz, Rep. Hemshute, Representative Eastman, Representative Sadler, Representative Ruffridge, Representative Stutz, Cologne, and I think Sadler, did I see him sneak in? And Andy Josephson. He will not be introduced from this point forward. The recording secretary is Lori Roland, and the moderator is Doug Bridges. Today on today's agenda, we have one item, and that is SB 140, school internet. Just so someone is aware, we need to be closer. Just so everyone aware, I'd like to kind of go through what we're going to, our process and what we're going to do. We are going to take invited testimony today from the individual sponsors. We are going to, Commissioner Bishop will be here tomorrow. We will be meeting tomorrow, and she will finish up with the administration's portion. And then, on Saturday. And then we will also be taking public testimony Saturday. I want to announce that the cutoff for sign up for public testimony is 12 o'clock. We will be taking the testimony from the LIOs and those in person first, and then we'll go to the off-net. But you do need to sign up before noon on Saturday to be able to testify. Upon completion of the testimony, it is our intent. Well, the amendments will also do Friday at 5 o'clock in my office. It will be the intention on Saturday to take up public testimony, take up amendments, and then yield to the body in terms of whether or not we pass it out or continue to hear it. It is my intention to pass it out on Saturday, but this is a committee. Today's presenters, first of all, we're going to have the sponsor of the original bill, Meridian Barrio. Yeah, and I hope I didn't butcher that. I know I did. And she is, I'll let you introduce yourself and go from there.
Good afternoon, Meridian Barrio, staff to Senator Hoffman. And just briefly, the original bill, SB 140, provides funding to eligible schools through the School Broadband Assistance Grants, or BAG grants, to help schools reach 100 megabits per second of internet download speed, and that would be an increase from 25 megabits per second, which is currently in statute. And that's it.
Excellent. Thank you. Any questions for the original sponsor? Since this bill has changed considerably, we will now be hearing from members of the committee and Mr. Wright, if you would. Oh, Brody, did I skip a page? Yes. I'd like to hear from Brody, staff to the Finance Committee to adopt the, or to tell us about the changes that were made in finance.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and Committee. My name is Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Neo Foster, co-chair of House Finance. My role is handling the legislation that comes through House Finance Committee. I'm here today to briefly explain the changes that happened in House Finance Committee on Senate Bill 140. The two changes were adopted by the committee on May 15th, 2023. The first change was we added a section to include an increase to the pupil transportation formula funding. The debate centered around the fact that the funding had not been increased for quite some time, and the increase would be raised to about half of the cost of inflation. And at that point in time, the fiscal note was going to reflect roughly $7.5 million. That amendment was adopted. Further discussion moved on, and a second a change was done through a conceptual amendment, which was to include the remaining of SB 52 version D, which was the Senate education bill for the BSA that had currently been in House Finance Committee. The conceptual amendment was moved to exclude the portion of the pupil transportation, since that had already been adopted in the previous amendment. And so the conceptual amendment was to adopt the remainder of SB 52 version D. That was debated and passed. And so then the committee went ahead and moved out the version of what you have in front of you today, which should be version U, changing it from version S to version U. And those are the two significant changes that happened in committee.
Any questions for Mr. Anderson? I think we've been briefed on the changes that were made to the original bill, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee adopt 33LS0687-D as its working document.
And I will object for the purposes of discussion. With that, I would like to bring up Tom Wright, Chief of Staff, to the Rules Chair to explain the changes in the new CS that we are looking to adopt.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. For the record, my name is Tom Wright, and I'm a staff to Representative Johnson and the Rules Committee. I prepared two documents that are in your packets. One is the sectional analysis. I did a full sectional analysis, since there really wasn't one, from the U version and then what was adopted in the D version. And you also have in front of you a summary of changes for HCS for CSSB 140 blank, and that's the 33LS0687-D version that's before you right now. Looking at the summary of changes, Section 1, I'm looking at the changes as compared to the Finance CS. And summary, or Section 1 and Section 2, there were no changes to what was adopted in Finance. Section 3, it adds a new section to AS 1403, which is public schools generally. And this new section gives the Board of Education the authority to authorize a charter school in the district under regulations adopted by the board. And these regulations must include an application procedure and provisions for the establishment of an academic policy committee. The local school boards then shall operate a charter school under this section as provided in 1403-255 through 1403-290. Section 4. And if you have any questions along the way, I'll try to answer them. And I also believe that Margaret Bergerud is online from Ledge Legal, and she can answer any technical questions as well. Section 3 is the same as found in Section 3 of the Finance CS. Section 5, it's the same as Section 4 of the Finance CS. Section 6 amends 14070.165A duties, and then adds a new subsection stating regulations regarding the establishment of charter schools be made by the Board of Education. Section 7 is the same as found in Section 5 of the Finance CS. Section 8 is the same as found in Section 6 of the Finance CS. Section 9 amends AS 1417.430. That's state funding for correspondence study, and this is found in House Bill 139, I believe, and this adds subsection 2 that adds a special needs factor to the ADM of the correspondence program. Section 10 amends the amends AS 1417.470, and that's space student allocation, and under this bill it adds a $300 increase to the BSA. Section 11 adds new subsections to AS 14.30.272 as procedure, excuse me, procedural safeguards. This adds provisions for deaf and hearing impaired that must be adopted by school districts. This is all found in part of the bill that Representative Allard sponsored, House Bill 111. Basically, it's a deaf and hard of hearing children's bill of rights and establishes consistency in the information provided to parents by the school district, allows parents to choose the best method of communication for their child, and requires the school district to provide services using the parents' chosen method of communication. Section 12 adds a new subsection to AS 14.30.276, that's least restrictive environment, and it requires the district or department to establish and operate a centralized program for students whose primary language is the American Sign Language, and to provide residential services as part of the program. It establishes that a school district may operate the program under specific requirements and and provide funding for the students who attend the program operated by the school district. And again, that's found in House Bill 111. Section 13 is the same as found in Section 8 of the House Finance CS. Section 14 repeals Sections 1, 2, and 21, Chapter 61, SLA 2014, and Section 38, Subsection B, Chapter 101, SLA 2018. This is the language found in the Education Tax Credit Bill sponsored by Representative Ruffridge. Section 15 adds to uncodified law. It provides, subject to appropriation, a lump sum payment to eligible teachers as a retention and recruitment incentive. The criteria for eligibility is contained within this provision. And again, this is part of the language found in House Bill 106, sponsored by the governor. Section 17 repeals the education tax credit statutes, as noted in Section 14. And I skipped over Section 16, Mr. Chairman, and that's uncodified law that allows the State Board of Education to adopt regulations to implement the changes found in Sections 3 and 6 of this bill. Section 18 is Section 5 is affected by the adoption of various sections of law of Chapter 40 SLA 2022 and takes effect June 30th, 2034. And this is part of the reporting requirement that's going on between the Department of Education and Department of Labor and Workforce Development that are tracking students and reporting every 5 years on a 20-year basis. That's found in Senate Bill 52. Section 19, Section 16 takes effect immediately, and then Section 20, the rest of the chapters take effect July 1st, 2024. And that's in a nutshell, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for Mr. Wright? I'm going to let him off that easy. Okay. Thank you, Tom. At this time, I'd like to ask Representative Ruffridge to come forward and present his portion of the bill that is being added. If you'd please come forward and put your name on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Rules Chair, members of the committee. My name is Representative Justin Ruffridge. I'm currently serving as co-chair of House Education and here to briefly introduce two bills that I had introduced last session, House Bill 139, House Bill 144, dealing with correspondence study programs and a slight change to the way that that is funded. Currently, correspondence programs are funded at a 90% of the average daily membership, with no special needs factors included. The purpose of the introduction of my bill was to increase that to be just the average daily membership multiplied by the special needs factor found in AS 1417-420A1. That was amended in committee to be slightly different and back down to the current rate of 90%, and certainly would welcome a conversation at the committee level regarding that component of this bill, and certainly happy to answer questions regarding that. HB 144 was a repeal of the sunset of the education tax credit. So this is due to sunset at the end of this calendar year, This has been a program established since 1987 to encourage private businesses to make charitable contributions to our schools in Alaska. This has been a program that has been quite successful and has been consistently extended. I believe that one of the components of this is to make this be a program that can be established for quite some time, to repeal the current sunset provision, thus making the program that exists currently available without a sunset. Those are very simply House Bill 144 and House Bill 139 in a nutshell, and certainly happy to answer any questions regarding the language of those bills as they are now.
Are there any questions for Representative Ruffridge? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
At this time, I'd like to ask Representative Allard or her staff, whomever will be presenting the portion of the bill on the deaf and hard of hearing provision of this of the new CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Representative Allard, representing Eagle River, and I'm also co-chair to Education Committee. I will be discussing sections 11 and 12 of the committee substitute, which is the CS, are based on HB 111, deaf and hard of hearing bill. Sections 11 and 12 introduce new language pertaining to deaf and hard of hearing children. These sections aim to establish consistency in the information provided to parents by school districts, allow parents to choose the best method of communication for their children, and require school districts to provide services the parents' chosen method of communication. I would like to just read this portion, Mr. Chairman. The services currently offered by school districts vary from site to site. 17 states have already passed a deaf and hard of hearing children's Bill of Rights bill. While there is a school for the deaf in the administrative code, it is not established in statute. Deaf and hard of hearing children possess the same inherent ability to acquire language as other children. They have the right and the capacity. To be educated, graduate from high school and pursue further education. And to embark on careers. They also have the right to have their ability to communicate and acquire language treated as a priority. We know that the lack of access in the classroom can result in students missing essential information, lectures, discussions, potential leading to low academic achievement, reduced language acquisition. Children who are deaf or hard of hearing have the right to accommodations and access to academic instruction. School services and extracurricular activities in their primary language access in their primary language gives them the opportunity to benefit from all services and programs at their school and fully engage with the education society. Given the unique nature of our rural Alaska, some children who are deaf or hard of hearing may require residential services part of their educational program. These sections further establish that children, their primary language, considers their prognosis, their hearing loss, provides instruction in their primary language, includes assistant devices, services, and provides appropriate and timely assessments in their primary language. Furthermore, these sections mandate Department of Education and Early Development DEED to establish and operate a centralized program for students whose primary language is ASL, American Sign Language, and provide residential services. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's time to end the discrimination, the segregation of our deaf and hard of hearing children. This is something everyone can support. And I'm willing to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions, Representative Allard? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Also online, I want to point out we have Karen Morrison with D to answer a question, Deborah Riggle to answer a question from the Department of Education, Margaret Burgard from Legal, Joel Isaac, Deputy Deed Commissioner, and Commissioner Bishop is online, but she will be here to testify on Saturday, so she will be able to do everything that we'll have the head bottle washer, I guess, with us. At this time, I'd like to ask Kelly Manning, Deed staff, to, well, she's here for questions. She just clicked off. So with that, I will remove my objection to advancing the CS. Are there further objections?
I'll object.
There is objections. Would you like to speak to your objections?
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And it is exciting to see this legislation advancing and I think get us to a good point. You know, I've been thinking about the role of schools and, you know, we take public schools for granted, I think, in a lot of ways, but public schools were actually an American innovation going back to the late 1800s. And I was doing a little reading over the holidays and it was interesting to read about how schools fueled economic growth, arise as an industrial power, and then helped win both World Wars One and Two. And of course, during that time, subsequent to that time, every developed nation copied us and put in place systems of universal public education. So I was thinking about how public schools are obviously beneficial for children, and I have children, so therefore it's personal, but they're also a fundamentally patriotic enterprise. And I think in a hostile world, it's worth reflecting on the value of our schools and ensuring we have a workforce, we have a strong industrial base, and can continue to be an arsenal for democracy, which we should be as a nation. So in thinking about that history and thinking about this CS, I'm objecting to the adoption of the CS because this CS does not support schools and has some problematic provisions that would undermine our public schools. And I'll talk about those in detail in a minute. I think the other piece of context we should think about is the continued out-migration of working-age families. And I've certainly heard from a lot of parents who have kids in classes with well over 30 kids, and they're looking at, can they justify staying in Alaska when states around the country of all political persuasions are making very large investments in schools? They're bringing down class sizes, they're investing in facilities, and, you know, educated parents have choices, and they don't have to stay here. And I think when we think about our shared goal of reversing out-migration, a high-quality public education system is the single most important thing we can do to retain, at least retain, I would like to see growth in our population of working-age families, but at least retain our working-age families. So there are a couple of, first of all, I want to say I do support inclusion of the governor's teacher bonuses in this bill, you know, as we progress toward the finish line, which is really exciting. I think it makes sense to marry a priority of the executive with our priority of raising the BSA. Makes a lot of sense. The charter school language in the CS, I think, is very problematic. You know, we do have a prohibition in using state funds for religious schools, and as constructed, the charter language is effectively a voucher program in which we would have so-called charter schools with nearly no public oversight using public funds for potentially religious material. They wouldn't be subjected to the kind of rigorous testing that our public school students are. And then it's worth asking the question, well, what if we could narrow that language so that what we're supporting is true public charters? And I think then it's a question of what is the best use of our limited resources? You know, I have a charter in my district, and some of my constituents send students to charter schools, and I'm familiar with the attendance at Chugach Optional, which is in my district. You know, Chugach has about half the minorities as a percentage, half the number of minorities as Anchorage as a whole, half the number of minority kids as the closest neighborhood school. And Chugach Optional, which is a great school for kids who go there, unfortunately serves mostly an upper income demographic. And I think that is almost universally true of charters. And there's a reason that, you know, when you look at testing data, if you only test high income kids whose parents have almost unlimited opportunities to invest in their enrichment, yeah, they're going to score well. That doesn't necessarily mean the charters are doing better than neighborhood schools. It does speak to those parents' ability to invest, and, you know, those parents are doing their job. But I would, you know, I think about the 80% of Alaska kids who go to neighborhood schools and how those neighborhood schools are an engine for opportunity. So I'm happy to support charters. I don't want to support charters disproportionately at the expense of our neighborhood schools. Moving on to the BSA, I think there's a lot of support in this body just based on votes, based on discussion in the Finance Committee of a BSA increase of not less than 680. That number is data-driven based on some districts' needs. It is certainly not sufficient for the Anchorage School District, but it is sufficient for some other districts looking forward, and that's a positive thing, and I think our BSA number should be driven by data. It's worth acknowledging the Anchorage Association of School Boards, which again are the elected bodies that our constituents have chosen to run school boards, recommends a BSA increase of 14-13. So I think, you know, I'm optimistic we will ultimately raise the BSA by not less than 680, but we do have to be realistic with ourselves that that doesn't actually meet the need. The $300 in the CS, I think, would leave us a long way from meeting our bare minimum constitutional mandate to maintain a system of public education, and I don't see it being rooted in any data from districts. So for those reasons, I'll object, but definitely appreciate this bill coming forward and I think approaching the finish line. Thank you.
I guess now would be an appropriate time to remind people that this is like any other committee. We will take amendments. We have a deadline, so if you've got amendments, get them in 4 o'clock Friday. With that, Madam Secretary, would you call the roll?
Representative Tilton.
Yes.
Representative Allard.
Yes.
Representative Sumner.
Yes.
Representative Shaw.
Yes.
Representative Fields.
No.
Representative Shrogi.
No.
Chair Johnson.
Yes.
5 yea, 2 nay.
So we now have the committee substitute before us. In your packet, there is cost estimates that has been made. I believe has been made available to every member of the legislature. I think it was sent out by email. I'd like to invite Alexi to the podium with the Ledge Finance and. You can go over some of those numbers with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. So we were asked to put together some cost estimates for the bill. I believe the Department of Education is working on fiscal notes that will probably be available on Saturday. So these are mostly based on fiscal notes the department prepared last year or some that they prepared last year that we then were able to update for newer numbers. But as we go through, I'll sort of highlight where these numbers came from. So the first line, sections 1, 4, 5, and 13 have to do with data on school outcomes. These sections were originally in Senate Bill 52. The Department of Education last year had a fiscal note for this that was $1,029,800, but $900,000 of that was included in the governor's budget and was in fact approved. So the marginal difference there is the $129,800. For an additional employee and some startup costs. So that would be our estimate for the need after that increment was approved last year. On line two, section two is the school broadband assistance grant changing from 25 megabits to 100 megabits. The Senate Finance Committee actually zeroed out this fiscal note and made it indeterminate because of concerns that the number was not sufficiently refined. The number in the original fiscal note was $19,835,800. That's the number we've included here. We'll see if the department has an updated number this year or if that's still their best estimate. But again, there was a zero on it from the Senate Finance Committee. The way the effective dates had worked in that version, that was not going to be effective until January 1st of this year. So it would have been possible to fund it later on. The way this bill is structured, we would need to fund it because it would be effective July 1st. We would need to provide the funding in this year's budget, so we can't just leave it indeterminate. We'd have to fund it if we want it to be effective. Sections 3 and 6, these are new sections. On charter school applications, we put in a placeholder of $6,000, representing the typical cost of regulations from other fiscal notes. Section 7, pupil transportation. The original fiscal note was $7.5 million. We recalculated that based on the student count projected for FY25 and came up with $7.3 million. We'll see if we match the department, but that's our best guess based on the revised student count or the projected student count for FY25. Item 8, the boarding school increase. This is the number from the department's fiscal note last year, $4,036,300. The correspondence school amount. This actually, there was not a fiscal note updated for the CS that the committee passed. The original bill, as was discussed earlier, was changing the multiplier from 0.9 to 1.2. The bill passed out of committee with a multiplier of the 0.9 still, but then multiplying it by 1.2. So still a 20% increase. Effectively, you could think about it as a 1.08% multiplier in those students if you do the math. But anyway, our estimate for that, based on the number of correspondent students in the FY25 projected student count, is 23,452,900. And I would note that that does not include the impact of the next section, the BSA increase. We separated that out, so hopefully we'll be a little clearer. So that's with the existing statutory BSA. Section 10 increases the BSA by $300 to $6,260. Based on the FY25 projected student count, that would increase state costs by $77,044,200. Next line, sections 9 and 10, the interaction, the higher BSA and the higher correspondence multiplier would be an additional $1,180,500 based on, again, the projected count of those students. The next two sections 11 and 12, this is the Department of Education fiscal note for that bill from House Bill 111, was $6,000. I would note that Section 12 may have a longer-term impact when a school is established, but the department did not put a number on that because there would be a process to establish the school potentially. So the fiscal note that was prepared last year was just $6,000. Unclear if there might be future costs or not, but that's all they had asked for at the time. Section 14, the education tax credit, has no fiscal impact on the budget. The Department of Revenue said that it would have a negative effect on revenue compared to the baseline of allowing the credit to expire. It would be $1.6 million in the first half year and then $3.2 million a year in the full years in which that credit would have otherwise expired. So it's not included in the fiscal impact because it's not a budgetary impact, but would impact the state's fiscal position. And then finally, Section 15, the lump sum payment to teachers. This was House Bill 106. The Department of Education's fiscal note last year for that item was $58,111,000. There may be a different number of teachers this year, so that number may shift when they do their actual fiscal note. So I know there's a lot of numbers. I'm happy to answer any questions about all of that.
Questions for the finance. Thank you. Thank you, Lexi. I do want to point out I spoke with the administration, and they've got an RFP out for the increase in internet speed. So we will have a firm number. Hopefully, Commissioner Bishop will be able to give us that on Saturday. So we will have a number on that based upon what someone is actually willing to do it for. So we should have a much more accurate fiscal note on that. Any other questions from the committee members of anyone that's here? With that, I'm going to recess until Saturday at 10 a.m. 10 or 11, Tom? 10 a.m. And once again, amendment deadlines. Get them to our office. And with that, we will recess and let the games begin. Thank you, everyone.